Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome back into the Card Chronicle podcast. It is the evening of Sunday, October 10th. Mike Rutherford here in Louisville, Kentucky. Dan Sinard back in Columbus, Ohio after a lovely, well, kind of lovely, weekend trip to the city of Louisville. Dan and the Sinards back home safely. And look, it would have been a fantastic weekend. We would have had a great time. We would have cool stories to tell if not for what took place from, what, about 6 to 6:30 p.m. on Saturday evening, afternoon. And that's what we're going to talk about today. It's going to be a shorter than usual podcast. We're not getting into questions. We won't dive into, I think, anything on the basketball side of things. It's going to be just about this Louisville-Virginia game, what happened, where we go from here. Dan, it's been over 24 hours now since the game. How are you?
Yeah, it's one of those weird feelings where in the heat of the moment, you're thinking things and you're saying things out loud to your friends or family that you're like, you know what? Obviously, what went down was an absolute travesty, and you feel like the sky is falling, and you wonder, you know, am I going to feel this exact same way or tomorrow, or is this just a heat of the moment type thing? But to be honest, I don't really feel better.
Same.
It's a pretty sick feeling. Kind of seeing the direction of the program right now. I know some harsh things were said by some people on social media, you know, some people probably that you hung out with. And at this point, there's really nothing to defend right now. I mean, that was just a collapse of all collapses, especially from a coaching standpoint. I think you hit the nail on the head perfect yesterday, where it seemed like every single person either watching the game in person or on TV could see what was happening, and yet our coaching staff did nothing about it. So it's pretty disheartening. And then on top of that, I mean, every time we lose, it's just another excuse to kind of see what our coaching staff is doing correctly. And then you go back to the recruiting, and we're coming up short there. It just really feels like we are going backward instead of forward. And I don't want to say the loss yesterday. I mean, no, you're never cheering for your team to lose, obviously. But when Virginia came down and scored that touchdown, of course, when we came back and had an opportunity for a field goal, I wanted to kick it. I wanted to win. But it almost felt like if we won, it's like, well, I guess we're kind of just delaying the inevitable again. I mean, because we shouldn't have been in that position to lose anyways. So a win kind of, you know, might have been able to hide things, everything that went wrong. But it was just a travesty. There's no other way to describe it.
Because I was really, really mad after the Wake Forest game and was still mad on Monday. And I'm like you. I think you're totally right. When I went to bed last night, I'm like, maybe this will feel a little bit better tomorrow. And no, it's the exact same feeling, but it's a different type of anger. The Wake Forest game, you're kind of spreading things around. You're mad at the staff a little bit. You're mad at the players a little bit for making the mistakes that they did. You're mad at the officials, certainly. You're mad at the ACC, everything. You're mad about everything. But it was a good back-and-forth game. Wake Forest is a good team. They're fine. And you kind of felt like it hurt because you feel like you let one get away in a very different way than you let this one on Saturday get away. This one, there's less of an excuse. And I think there's nobody else to blame but yourself. You can't really point fingers in any direction. We can't bitch about the refs. We can't bitch about the ACC. We can't bitch about Virginia. This was on us. 30-13 going into the fourth quarter. And I mean, you're totally right. Everybody saw this coming. When they scored that first touchdown, you're like, oh boy, please put the foot on the gas, put the foot on the neck, whatever cliche you want to use, please go down there and score. And we come out in this, I hate to use this, I mean, it's the first thing that came to my mind, bitch-ass vanilla offense again,
yep.
Which had not worked at the beginning of the game. The other offense, the more up-tempo, the let Malik rip, the let's get things moving up and down offense that we saw in the second and third quarters had worked beautifully. We totally went away from everything that had been working on both sides of the ball. And it would be less frustrating, I think, if we hadn't already seen this before. We saw this a couple of times last year. We saw it a couple of times in 2019. But more recently, this was basically the exact same sequence of events that we saw in the Florida State game. The only difference here is I think Virginia's better than Florida State. That's what it came down to. Virginia could take advantage of the fact that we completely took our foot off the gas. Florida State couldn't because Virginia's better. And, I mean, I really don't know where to start here. I should preface my comments by saying I have not rewatched the game since being there on Saturday. I'm going to rewatch it before the radio show tomorrow. So I'm just kind of going off of memory here. And I'm pissed off that it ruined what was a good day. I mean, you were in town. Our buddy Weber was in town. It was a fantastic weekend. We were able to get together, was able to see everybody. Virginia went to her second game ever. She had a absolutely fantastic time. And it would have been just like a perfect weekend if we had just closed the door and it didn't happen. I guess we'll start the discussion with what I think is the most consistent complaint that the fan base has right now, which is the defense continuing to rush three, especially on third and longs. It's been a complaint basically the entire season. It was a complaint last year. It's a complaint that doesn't seem to be getting any attention whatsoever from the staff because we just keep doing the same fucking thing every week, and it is driving me crazy. Louisville had been good on third downs coming into the last, I think, 3 weeks, and since then they've been abysmal. I believe, and again, I don't have it in front of me, Virginia was like 9 of 19 on third downs yesterday. Wake Forest the week before was like 10 of 19. It has been a point of emphasis. It's been a point of contention, and I just don't understand why we keep doing the same thing drive after drive, week after week, when we're not getting any positive results out of it. I fully understand it. If you're Brian Brown or somebody out there and you're listening to all these complaints, you're saying to yourself, like, I know way more about football than all of these guys. And that's completely true. It doesn't mean that they're all wrong and you're right, because I think sometimes football coaches, when they're doing style and scheme and all that stuff, they treat it like they're splitting the atom. And sometimes it's just not that complex. Sometimes it's as simple as what worked on first and second down might work on third down. And the thing that I don't understand, and the point I really want to drive home, is the whole point of rushing three is to drop eight and avoid single coverage by your cornerbacks and your safeties, and to avoid the potential of giving up a ton of long passing plays and a ton of passing yards, right? That's the whole point. That's what you're trying to do here.
Yep.
What we're scared of allowing opposing offenses to do is already happening.
Yeah.
Brennan Armstrong threw for 500 fucking yards. What are we afraid of here? I mean, is it him throwing for 800 yards? If that's your answer, fine. Like, let me know. But what you're trying to prevent by not rushing more than three players is happening anyway. Why not at least try to be a chaotic defense? Try to get more sacks. Try to create more turnovers. And if you give up a handful of big-time plays, whatever. At least it's, you're in the exact same spot. For the life of me, Dan, I cannot understand the mentality of these defensive calls.
I went back and I hate read the Scott Satterfield press conference. I didn't watch it.
It was bad.
And it seemed like he's like, yeah, you know, we're going to have to go back and look at the film. You know, we can't rush Yasir Abdullah X amount of times. You know, it's not even that. First off, we're in year three, year four. There is clearly a lack of depth when it comes to the defensive side of the ball, especially the defensive line. And that's an indictment on him and the coaching staff that they have not improved that at all in 3 to 4 years. I mean, it's quite sad. I mean, we literally never get pressure on the quarterback, you know, unless we are kind of bringing those extra people. And it obviously he doesn't trust some of these young kids in the back end to be able to hold up one-on-one. But I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, we're not facing Chip Kelly, Oregon. We're not facing Justin Fields, Ohio State. I mean, Virginia and Brennan Armstrong threw 60 times for 500 fucking yards at home, and you have a 30-13 lead. I mean, it's completely unacceptable. I mean, there's really nothing else to say. I mean, Scott Satterfield, nice guy. I really seem like he's a nice dude, but I truly just don't think this is the guy. I think sometimes the players kind of carry the same temperament as he does, which is kind of a reflection on him. And I don't know. I mean, it's tough. It's tough to watch. There was so much apathy, like, after the loss. Like, of course I was pissed off, but, like, it wasn't like the pissed off I was, you know, maybe back, like, in 2016 when we dropped a game where I'm like, God damn it, like, you know, we should be better. But it's almost like you expect it to happen, especially with this coaching staff at the helm. You know, Brian Brown, we're in year three. Well, I'm out of excuses to give this guy. I mean, it's just not happening for him. I don't know. I would say it's a sad state of affairs with the program right now. You know, we could come out and win next week. And of course, I'll be happy, but it's not going to change, you know, kind of how I feel right now, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, for starters, we're on a bye week next week. So
yeah, that's right.
Worst possible time to have this type of mentality and this type of, you know, stigma surrounding the program. It's going to be a long couple of weeks for Scott Satterfield and company. But to kind of your point, when James Turner missed the last second field goal, obviously I was crushed. Obviously I wanted to win the game, yep. But I kind of already resigned myself. Like, the anger was already in place. Like, I didn't flip out nearly as much. I threw my hat on the fourth down conversion on the touchdown drive because I knew right then it was over. Like, and if we're being honest, I knew right when we kicked the field goal to make it a 6-point game that it was over.
There was probably like 6 or 7 plays. If we just make one of them, we win. And yeah. I think we were like 0-6 or 0-7 when we needed it. It was sad.
When we went conservative on second down in the red zone, like right then I was like, we're going to lose this game. I said it out loud to Mary. I was like, we're going to lose because we're going to he's settling for the field goal here. And when it was a 6-point game, everybody in the world knew what was about to happen. Everybody, every Louisville fan I talked to was like, they're gonna score because we've seen this before. And when it happened, like, I was expecting it. And when Turner missed the last second field goal, I was upset, but the anger had already set in. It was already the mentality was already, we should never have been in the spot, and that's where I was going to be. We also can't ignore, I think, when we're talking about our own just dissatisfaction with everything, what Kentucky's doing and how that plays at least a small part in it, because I was overwhelmed by how much we flipped places in the last 10 years. Like Saturday's the perfect example. That mentality that I just described of Virginia getting the ball back, down 6, the length of the field to go, and 2 minutes to play, and every Louisville fan assuming we're going to lose is exactly how Kentucky football fans have lived their entire lives. Like, we see them, they're still doing it right now. Like, they still can't believe that they're this good. I think they're starting to believe it, but you still, like in the Florida game, they're like, well, when Florida got the ball back, we're going to lose this one. The Missouri game, they have the same thing. Like, they have been so snake bitten and so accustomed to losing those types of games, they still haven't really gotten over that. And now the roles have totally reversed to where, we all just thought, like, we knew what was going to happen in the fourth quarter. We knew that the collapse was imminent, and then we go home after the game, and UK's on national television kicking the shit out of LSU. It's just, it's awful. This is a bad, bad place to be, and we have run the gauntlet of emotions already. We started this year off not knowing how to feel about Satterfield. Week one, week two, really, after the first two games, you know, it's all, this guy sucks, get him out of here, this is just not a good fit. And then exactly what he had to do to win the fan base back, exactly what we described in that podcast after the Ole Miss game, he does. You beat UCF in this dramatic, feel-good fashion, and then you go down to Tallahassee and you beat a wounded Florida State team, and all of a sudden, we're all kind of feeling good. We've all got that momentum back, and then you have the gut punch loss to Wake Forest and the inexcusable collapse against Virginia. and we're right back to where we were in the middle of September. It's just, it's tiring. It's frustrating. And when you look at the remainder of the schedule, especially when you look at the upcoming schedule, there are a lot of games that are in a row here that we could lose. Like, this thing could get away from Satterfield and company awfully quickly, and it wouldn't be so frustrating. It wouldn't be so scary if it hadn't been so damn avoidable. And that's where we are here talking about this.
I mean, the UK comparison, I really kind of sat down and thought about this last night. And I mean, obviously I have to give credit where credit is due. I mean, Mark Stoops has slowly built this program. Well, listen, hear me out. And people, you know, you see people saying, hey, we need to give this coaching staff 2 to 3 more years. We don't have the bodies and the trenches and stuff like that. The difference with the first couple of years of Stoops, when, you know, obviously he wasn't winning a ton, at least he at least he was still recruiting at a pretty high level.
Right.
Right now that's not happening. And so I guess there was kind of, maybe there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And for us, I mean, the thought of, you know, keeping this recruiting up for another 2 to 3 years, I mean, that could really, you know, set our program way back. And people are like, well, it takes time to build a program. I mean, we've seen this program turn around on a dime before. I mean, it can be done. There's no reason that we have to wait for a 5-year rebuild. I mean, we, you know, Louisville is capable of doing it in a shorter period of time with the right hire. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it sucks. It kind of compounds the disappointment of what's going down, you know, 45 minutes east of us. There's just no way to sugarcoat it. I mean, it just sucks being a fan right now.
45 minutes, you fast drive.
Yeah,
over here.
Well, yeah, we had some, that was the college days, I guess. It's been a while.
Leadfoot Sennard. All right. I mean, if you're not winning games on the field and you're keeping your fan base content that way, you've got to be doing one of two things. One, you're losing, but you've got star power and you're playing an exciting brand of football. Or two, you're really recruiting above the typical standard for your program and giving your fan base hope for the future that way. Louisville's doing none of those things. They're not winning enough on the field. They're not exciting, although, you know, the offense, I think, has certainly held its own the last couple of weeks. But they don't have elite star power, and they're not recruiting. And it's tough to keep everybody happy when that's the case. I mean, case in point, Saturday afternoon is a perfect day for football. It is unseasonably warm for October. There's not a cloud in the sky. It's a good opponent, but one that you should beat coming into your building. You can tailgate all day. And I don't know what the official announced attendance was, but it was, I mean, it was the type of attendance that we were bitching about when the team sucked in like the late 2000s, early 2010. Like, it's, I don't know, man. Like this, we're in a weird spot right now. And maybe the most frustrating part of this whole deal is we really had a chance to catch lightning in a bottle when we had the Charlie Strong years rolling into the move to the ACC and Lamar Jackson, right? I mean, you know, Charlie comes here, he produces NFL talent out of this program, the likes of which we've never seen before. I mean, he's got Teddy Bridgewater, who's a star, but he's got also, you know, guys like Calvin Pryor and Devontae Parker and Marcus Smith and, you know, Sheldon Rankins and dudes who are just going to be high draft picks and stick around the NFL for a long time. And then we make the move to the ACC. Petrino gets us the most exciting player in the history of the program, one of the most exciting players in the history of college football. He wins the Heisman Trophy, and since that season collapsed at the end of 2016, what's happened? We had just sort of a whatever 2017 year. It felt like we completely wasted our last chance to have Lamar Jackson. We have the disastrous, just total collapse in 2018. And then Scott Satterfield's come in and had an overachieving, but relative to program standards, kind of average first year, a bad last year, and then we seem to be on the verge of having another average year this year, and there's no sign that things are going to get substantially better anytime soon. And it just feels like we wasted this opportunity to become a mainstay college football program. It's so hard to break up into that next tier in the world of college football. And we had that potential, making the jump to a Power 5 league, or I guess from the Big East, which was a Power 6 league, to a better league in the ACC, having the cool factor of Teddy Bridgewater folding into Lamar Jackson, and we haven't capitalized at all. Like, we didn't take advantage enough when those guys were here, and we certainly have not kept any of that momentum since those guys have left. And it's just, you're looking at the future and you're like, when are we going to be back to where we were hoping to be 5-6 years ago? When are we going to be a national player again? It's certainly not happening right now. It's not going to happen next year, it doesn't look like. And what sign do we have that it's coming again anytime soon?
That's where, like, I look at the program and my shoulders just kind of sink, because I look at this staff and I'm just like, you're lying to yourself. At least me, when I lay, I'm lying to myself if I truly think this is going to be the staff that turns it around and, like, leads this program, you know, to a 10-win season or a bowl. There's just no way it's going to happen. So, like, the longer that, you know, Scott Satterfield is here, to me, we're just delaying the inevitable. I just don't see this getting better. I only see it getting worse. And it's tough. I mean, yeah, coming in for the game yesterday, I was super excited. I mean, and it was fun. I mean, we had a great time, but there was a noticeable, I mean, it had been a while since I've been to a game. I mean, there's just a noticeable difference from kind of the feeling of the fan base. And obviously that showed up in, like, the numbers that came out to the game. And I mean, I'm really afraid to see what's going to happen in 2 weeks, unfortunately, whenever we have our next home game. I mean, I feel like yesterday's loss turned a lot of fans way off. But I don't know. I mean, obviously we're still going to cheer for the Cards. We're still going to break them down on a weekly basis, but you know, I'm lying to myself if I think that this is the guy that's going to lead our program to good things. Unfortunately, like I said, I mean, nice guy, but he's just not doing the job for me, at least.
You don't have to say nice guy every time.
I do. I feel better. Here's the deal. Like, I mean, this is this guy's livelihood. Like, I hate
I know,
that. Like,
I know.
If someone was, like, calling for, like, my job, I'd be like, what an asshole. But, I mean, you know, it just a spade is a spade. I've seen enough in 3 years, and it just doesn't seem like it's going to get done.
And nobody wants Scott Satterfield to fail. Nobody wants Brian Brown to fail. We want these guys to be the answer.
Exactly.
We just need some tangible evidence that that's going to be the case. And right now, it's not there. I want to talk about how potentially the second half of the season could be saved. But before we get there, I want to remind you guys. Not necessarily, that's probably not the right word. We are once again now being sponsored by our friends over at Home Field Apparel. So we'll be reminding you guys from now on about our friends over at Home Field Apparel. If you haven't checked them out, again, it's the best premium college apparel brand that you're going to find anywhere on the internet or in person or in real life or whatever. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Since the last time we've talked about Home Field, they've added a ton of new schools. They do have Kentucky now, but whatever. It's, you know, you don't have to buy their stuff. They've got more. The Louisville stuff's way better. It's way cooler. They've got retro brand tees, retro hoodies, some new stuff as well. You can find a variety of stuff. Just check out the options. Dan's wearing a Home Field Apparel shirt at the game on Saturday. You got a compliment from Drew Diener, I believe.
Yeah. We rode in an elevator, and he gave me a compliment, so that was nice. Wasn't the only compliment on the shirt. Definitely, Home Field, they pump out great products, so I'll rock it anytime I can.
You rode the elevator with Diener. I rode it with Tom Jackson. We're both riding the elevator with superstars. Actually, he was like, he almost made the elevator too full. Mary was like, I kind of want to get off right now. I'm like, that's Tom fucking Jackson. Calm down. But I was not wearing my Home Field shirt. If I was, Tom Jackson absolutely would have given me a compliment. Check out their stuff for yourself. And when you make your first purchase from Home Field Apparel, use the promo code CHRONICLE15 at checkout. That's going to save you 15% off your first purchase. Again, CHRONICLE15, all one word, homefieldapparel.com. Check it out today. Look like Danny Sinard. Get compliments from superstars like Drew Diener. Feel good about yourself. That's what Home Field does. All right, so one half of this season is over, and it's gone not great. There certainly was a great moment against UCF, but you're 3-3. You're 1-2 in the conference. To me, Dan, looking at the second half of the season, I think there are only two ways that this season gets quote-unquote saved. That we have this season end and the fans feel relatively good or good at all about Scott Satterfield. Option one, they somehow go at least 5-1 in the second half and finish the regular season 8-4. Option two, I think they can get away with going 7-5, if they beat Kentucky in the regular season finale. I think that's the only other way that Scott Satterfield can save this thing, because UK, I think we have to assume that they're going to be coming into that game at 10-1 or 9-2. I mean, at this point, like, they're going to be favored in every game that they have but Georgia. Like, they could easily be 10-1 or 9-2. And that gives you the opportunity, if you're Louisville, to kind of do the 2016 thing to them, where they thought they were having this fantastic season, and it's still a good year, but to end it with an upset loss at the hand of their arch rivals, who are just kind of a whatever team, would be crushing for them. And I mean, that kind of, I feel like that was the moment that really jolted the Mark Stoops era at UK. Like you said, they were recruiting well, but they hadn't had the on-field results. After they win that game, you know, they have a good 2017. They have the fantastic 2018. They've kind of had it going since then. Maybe that can be the moment for Scott Satterfield. I don't know, but if it happens, we can at least convince ourselves. Is there any other route, or would that even satisfy you at this point?
I mean, I guess satisfy, yes. I mean, I would be satisfied with it, but I think this program is capable of bigger things just because, I we have past history of it. I don't know. It's tough for me to say, like, I would be over the moon with it. Of course, I would be obviously thrilled to, you know, kind of put a wrench in UK's dream season. I don't see us finishing 5-1. I mean, that would be awesome. I just don't see that happening, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, 7-5 with a win over UK. That would be satisfying. But again, I'm looking for bigger things from the football program. I don't think 7-5 and a win over UK is going to happen. But if it did, yeah, I would be happy.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I'm going for. Is it likely? No. Would it make fans happy going into a bowl game and then potentially into the 2022 season? Yeah, for a period of time. But man, I didn't see anything on Saturday that leads me to believe that that's possible. And
one of the reasons I hate this is because it kind of overshadows, like, I mean, Malik Cunningham is having an outstanding season.
Oh, he's been terrific.
Like, he's not being talked about nearly enough because it seems like, you know, he's being let down, mainly the coaches are being talked about after the games instead of the players on field performance. But I know these kids, they're trying their best. I know they're playing hard. It's unfortunate what's happened these past couple weeks. I mean, we're not at practice, and you know that they're, you know, putting 110% in and busting their ass, and to have things fall that, you know, that way 2 weeks in a row has got to be so disheartening. And, you know, now they're going to a bye week and they're going to have to pick themselves off the mat again. So I hope they're able to do it. But, you know, we have had a couple kids totally show out this year. And, I hate that it seems that that's kind of gone unnoticed a little bit.
Yeah, no, Malik has been fantastic. And, I mean, Hassan Hall, his return.
Yeah, he was great.
Seemingly the dead kind of got ruined by the way the game ended. I think you're seeing some young guys really step up at wide receiver. Tyler Harrell he's a big play waiting to happen every single game. Amari Huggins-Bruce can be really, really effective as well. There are reasons to be – there are reasons why we should feel more excited than we do right now, but you also can't – you can't blame anybody in the fan base for being down right now after going through what we've gone through the last couple of weeks. And also, like, not getting good – the explanations we've gotten from the staff when we've had complaints have not been good enough. Scott Satterfield's reactions, his post-game press conference on Saturday was not good enough. He seemed just sort of dazed. Brian Brown, when he answered questions from the media, I liked that he was overly harsh of his defense, their performance against Wake Forest. But his answers when he was asked specifically about rushing more than three did not fit the bill. It did not satisfy me whatsoever. And – one of the big topics on the radio show last week was whether or not we had been too lenient on Brian Brown, because I was just kind of saying, I think their defense is doing enough and they're going up against great offenses, but the stats are the stats, man. And at some point you can't run from them. This is the 112th ranked team defense in America right now. There are only 130 teams in FBS. Every meaningful stat on defense, Louisville ranks in the triple digits. They are, by any metric you use, one of the worst defenses in Power 5 conference football. And that's not what we were told all summer long. The word out of the Louisville camp, and I know that you can't just take what the coaches say at face value and believe everything that they spout out during fall camp, but they did preach us. They did sell us this notion of, hey, maybe this is going to be the first year of the Satterfield era where the defense is leading the offense to water. Like this, it's going to be a defensive team. We're going to control the ball on offense because the defense is going to be so good. And it's actually been exactly what we saw in 2019. The numbers are almost identical. The offense has been very good. The defense has been very bad. And when that's the case, you're 3-3 despite playing in a shitty conference like the ACC. Yeah. And it's not a whole lot of hope that you're going to improve that. I mean, looking at the schedule now, you've got BC, a very losable game. They're certainly no worse than Virginia coming to town on October 23rd. Then you're at a nationally ranked NC State team, and then you play Clemson. This could easily go from going into October feeling like you have a chance to win the Atlantic Division or at least be in that race deep into the season to all of a sudden having lost five games in a row and nobody caring when you host Syracuse on November 13th. This is a very, very dangerous point in time for not just this Louisville football team, but I think this Louisville football program.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes it all the more frustrating is because there was like a glimmer of hope that like, man, this thing is wide open and we have a shot at this thing. And like for me, it feels like we got let down by the coaching staff these last two games. I mean, when it comes down to like a one possession, one, you know, kind of one play can turn a game around on a dime. A lot of times it comes down to coaching decisions, and that's a shame. But I mean, you go through those next three games, and I mean, it's scary to think about that this thing could, like you said, very easily spiral out of control. So, you know, hopefully they get healthy these next 2 weeks. It sounds like Satterfield thinks they're pretty banged up. So hopefully we get some guys healed up here and get ready for Boston College. But, yeah, I mean, it's the fan base. It's tough to ask this fan base especially to be patient because not just for football, but the last 5 years, I mean, we've been patient long enough. We've been more than patient. You know, we deserve something. We deserve a winner. And that's why I think a lot of people are just so frustrated right now is because we just don't see that happening. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of the fan base is checking out at this moment. So hopefully they can right the ship and get some of these guys back on board. But I would be lying if I say a lot of the wind, you know, a lot of the wind has been taken out of my sails, at least.
The mood inside that stadium on October 23rd is, yeah. I mean, it's going to be bad. There's no way around it. It's going to be low and it's going to be hard to blame anybody for it. My last complaint before we move on and start to get out of here. And again, I have not rewatched the game. So maybe this was explained or maybe it was somebody wrote about it after the game and I just haven't seen it. What was up with the timeout after the kickoff at the end of the game? Like,
I know that was the weirdest thing. Yeah. I haven't seen anything on it either, but I thought the same thing.
Could have used that. I mean, would have been nice to have that in our back pocket going at the, I mean, I just, little stuff like that. I just don't know what to do with it, but do you have any parting thoughts? I know we've just kind of moaned and griped, but that's you know, what else are you going to do after that game?
Yeah. So like, this is actually a kind of I guess you'd call it a parent corner. Like, it was great. Obviously, I've seen you at the game. We saw Mary, you know, saw our friend Webb, and then your all's kids were there. I brought my son Cam, and it was great to get everyone together. And so when I was driving home yesterday, I literally apologized to my son because I took him to the Vikings game. He dressed up in Vikings gear when they lost to the Bengals. I take him to the Reds losers this summer. And I was like, buddy, man, I'm sorry. Like, I keep having you cheer for these teams that lose like this. And, like, he kind of put, like, this, like, a sports perspective. He was like, I don't care, Dad. It was, like, the most fun ever. And I was like, oh, man, that's great. Like, I you know, it kind of made me, like, take a step back and be like, all right, like, it is just a game. But, like, obviously after I, like, let him out of the car, I, like, went into a darker room and I was like, God damn it. But no, it was a cool moment. We love going to the game with our kids. And yeah, that's another reason I want the program to get good. I want my son to see a winner. It's been a while, I feel like.
Yeah, we got home and Virginia actually just like ripped her cheerleader outfit off and was like, "Get me some big blue gear. I can't take this shit anymore. Like, you asshole. What have you done to me? I'll never forgive you for this bullshit." Like, no, she had a blast, but we're bringing a baby boy into this world in 2 weeks or less. And my God, what world is this kid entering? What's happening right now?
Maybe baby boy Rutherford is going to bring some good mojo. I mean, if baby boy Rutherford comes in, we win a couple games and win the UK game, you know, we're going to declare this kid king of the world. So, let's get this boy out here, change things up, change the mojo, and start moving in a positive direction.
A lot of pressure on Malik Rutherford coming into this coming into this world. Gotcha. Can I just assume that your Dan of the Dumps is basically this whole episode?
Yeah, no, 100%. And the fact, if anyone sees my son's shirt, it was taken out from underneath our seat yesterday. That was like, I was like, so I called you. I was like, "Hey, can you go check under our seat? We left like my son's water bottle and shirt under the seat." And you're like, "Oh, the water bottle's here, but the shirt is gone." I was like, perfect. Just the biggest nail in the coffin ever. So, lost and found Cardinal Stadium. There's a long sleeve, kids Cardinal shirt. Please return it to me.
I did love that when I told you it was gone, you immediately blamed Scott Satterfield. You were like, "Well, fucking thanks, Scott." I was like, "Yeah, is there anything we won't blame on Sat at this point?"
I know. Yeah. Sorry, Scott.
Oh God. I feel like I had one thing to add and I've just completely blanked now, but yeah, so no Dan of the Dumps outside of losing a shirt. We do have two new podcast reviews. Again, if you haven't yet subscribed to the podcast, it's the easiest way to make sure that you don't miss an episode, that you know right when the new ones come out. And we love it when you give us reviews, when you leave us 5-star ratings or, you know, whatever rating you want to leave. We're not going to put any pressure on you, but to kind of push you in the direction of leaving reviews, we like to read them on the episodes. Two new ones. This one says, "Must listen for Cards fans. The quintessential podcast for Louisville Cardinals sports fans. Mike and Dan cover many aspects of Cards athletics in a humorous and knowledgeable way with enough self-deprecation to keep it real. Come for the sports news. Stay for stories of Dan whiffing golf swings. 5 Cardinal bird masks out of 5. Other review says, "Always quality except the audio. Mike and Dan and Mike, these guys are always reliable for high-quality entertainment and Louisville Cardinal takes. You can't miss a show because each one will keep you on the edge of your seat waiting for the next ridiculous statement or story. Love these guys and hope they keep up the great work." Before we do get out of here, and thank you to both people for leaving those messages, I do have to kind of, you know, smack you in the face for bitching about your sports teams. Your Vikings did beat my Lions, so at least you've got that. I'm 0-5. I've got nowhere to turn in the world of sports right now. I'm like just turning in a full circle, looking for somebody to save me, and nobody's throwing any sort of lifeline out there. It is awful here. I hate it here.
Yeah, I mean, the Vikings lose that game against 30 other franchises. The only one that they win against is the Lions. It was like a battle of wills of like who can lose. It's like, "Oh, all we got to do is ice the game here, and we fumbled, and you guys come down and take the lead by one." Shout out Jalen Reeves-Maben. Shout out Marcus Maben, made a big play. And then the Vikings, who have missed probably 100 field goals to win games over the years, like hit a 50-yarder to win. So, yeah, weird game, weird season. Mike Zimmer's going to get fired soon. So, again, that's another situation of delaying the inevitable.
I mean, I've got Scott Satterfield like totally stone faced and not really answering questions, and then I've got Dan Campbell literally crying.
We didn't talk about that. That was awesome.
I was like, I don't know which one makes me more mad. I was like, I don't know how to feel about like either one of these. It's probably Satterfield because Campbell. I'm like, at least he cares.
Yeah, also, I was gonna say, I would love some Satterfield tears. Give me some tears, baby.
That's the answer. That's how the podcast ends. Our one solution is cry more, Scott.
Literally. If you don't cry in the next press conference, your ass is back to Appalachia.
You got one bye week to work up some tears, my man. We need some tears to let us know that you care. Jesus Christ, what a terrible place to be. All right, we're going to have another podcast at some point in the next week or so. I think Keith is going to – I'm going to try to get Keith on – before the end of this week to do kind of a mid-season review, get his thoughts. He'll add some smarts to this podcast. But I know he's dealing with 3 kids now. 2 of them have been sick. He's been running around. I know he's getting very little sleep, so it's hard for him to make that happen. But hey, we have Baby Boy coming sometime soon. If you don't hear the podcast for an extended period of time, it might be because that happened, or it might just be because we the usual thing where we can't get our schedules ironed out. We're going to try to have another one this week. Man, let's get through this bye week together. Basketball right around the corner. We got the switch on Saturday.
I was going to say, shout out Mike James. Hope he gets a full recovery. I hate to hear that. So, yeah, we're basketball sneaking up on us. So, you don't want to turn all your attention to that, but it feels like that might be happening soon.
That's how mad we are about this loss on Saturday. We didn't even make time for the T-Will ringleader of a
Jesus. I mean, we're
defrauding a health system scheme.
Like these are the bad times.
Until we talk to you guys again, let's just say it. Go Cards.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.